Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Well, good morning, Jacob's Well. Go ahead and have a seat. And I'm glad you're getting to know one another. I'm Greg Meyer. And anyway, great to be here today. On your Sunday paper, you'll find an outline on the back. Invite you to pull that out. If you'd like to follow along with that, you're welcome to. If you don't want to, that's okay as well. So last week, we were talking about resolutions, New Year's resolutions. Actually, we weren't really talking about resolutions. We were talking about what we wanted our 2015 to be like. And what we wanted to, not so much like, but what we wanted to be about. And that's really significantly a different sort of question. And for the next 5 weeks, we're going to be pushing that further. We're going to, in fact, be pushing that a lot further. We're not just talking about what we want this year to be about. We're talking about what we want our lives to be about. And we're calling this focus, This Is Your Life. And we're asking the question, are you who you want to be? Are you who you really want to be? That's a big question. And it's an important one as well. When I started thinking about this, it was quite a few months ago, I started thinking about this and picked this topic out and what we were going to be doing with it. Two things immediately came to my mind, two reactions. One of them was, this is your life. Don't waste it. You got one shot. You cannot turn the clock back. Don't mess it up. Make it matter. And then there's the other side of it that says, this is your life. Yeah, you only get one shot at it, but it's not a product. It's a process. And, you know, it isn't something about, it's not a pass-fail sort of thing. It's really about trying and then learning and then trying again. And, you know, I thought, well, which of these is true? And I decided they're both true. I mean, I think that is the tension of realizing that our lives do matter and kind of some of that desperation we feel sometimes, like, you know, the clock is ticking. And then also maybe the peace that we feel saying, you know, I just kind of have to live into this, and there isn't a right way to do it, but, you know, that's why I have tomorrow. That's why we have stuff like forgiveness and grace in our world. And I think they're both real, and I think that's the tension of those two that we need to live in all the time. Now, to be sure, I want you to know that as we're doing this, especially, you know, if you're not familiar with Jacob's Well very much, we're not telling you what your life is supposed to be about. I mean, I don't even know what my life is really supposed to be about. So there's no way I'm ever going to begin telling you what your life should be about, okay? So we're just not even going to go there. That's not what this is trying to accomplish. But what I'm afraid of is because when we say, well, this is your life, you know, what's your life going to be about? The fact that we can't just answer that question, sometimes we just shelve the question. Well, we don't try to figure it out. And so we just do whatever happens. Or the other thing that we often do is because it's such a hard question that we substitute that question of what do you really want your life to be about with something simpler, something more manageable, something that we can come up with an answer with or answer for. And, you know, I really don't think we want to go there. We need to look deeper than either of those options. Today, as the first week of This Is Your Life, we are looking at this question of this is your why. Why? Why you know, it's kind of a purpose question. What is your life supposed to be about, and what are you supposed to be doing with your life? I can tell you right off that it's not 42, nor is it your life, you know, the purpose of your life is whatever you want it to be, which is when I Googled the meaning of life, those were the first two and the biggest answers. So, nah, I don't think any of them do a very good job of it. But what I think is really important, and I hope you can be on track with me, is that you don't get to choose the purpose of your life. You don't. The purpose of your life is something that is embedded in you. It's embedded within all of us. What we do get to choose is how are we going to embody that? How are we going to live it out? How are we going to put wheels on the purposes that are just innately in us as people? And that's intrinsic to realize. It's really important that we realize that it works that way. Now, I hope all of you, as you would think of a question like that, that you would maybe innately realize or feel or sense that God would have something to do with all that. And in a community like this, I know when we say, well, you know what, God has to do with the purpose of my life, there's a lot of different ways of understanding who God is and what God is. And I think that's a really healthy thing that we don't just have the same pat answer on that, but that's part of a conversation, a discussion, a learning for all of us. Because I mean, the reason I think that that's so important is that I think we need to see that whatever it is that our lives are about is coming from somewhere deeper. The Bible, in fact, makes this point just over and over and over again, this idea that our purpose comes from God. Verses like this. This is just one I would pull out. All things are done according to God's plan and decision, and God chose us to be God's own people in union with Christ because of God's own purpose, based on what God had decided from the very beginning. Now, there's lots of places in the Bible where it asserts that our purpose comes from God, but my guess is that if you know you're not really sure that your purpose comes from God in the first place, hearing a Bible verse tell you that it does isn't going to make any difference, right? And it doesn't. But what it does maybe do is once we start moving there, it lets us see how that might work, what God has to do with our purpose, and how that all goes together. But I think, you know, Bible aside, or anybody's theology that they want to put on you aside, I think maybe that we can all come around to this idea that whatever it is I'm about had better be significant enough. It better be big enough that I could not really come up with it myself. Because if it is, I'm not sure it's really worth living my life for it. I've got a pretty good imagination. I'm not too dumb of a guy. But when I started thinking about what I think my life should really be about, I'm not really sure it's worthy of my life. I just don't have a big enough imagination. I think we need to feel that it's coming from somewhere that has an understanding of the world and of what the world is woven of and how the world is made that is so big and so deep and so wide that it could entail anything that we could experience, anyone we could be, whatever this world might want to bring to our steps. So, you know, with that idea, I think, you know, we're going to be moving forward. And I'm happy to have you challenge that, to ask questions about it. You know, let's talk about that kind of stuff. But what I want to say is when I talk about God having something to do, God deciding what your purpose is, I'm not saying that God, you know, sets or decides your purpose. It's not like getting an assignment from God. But it is God who has that perspective that I was talking about, you know, the one that can see far enough, that can see wide enough, that can see deeply enough to be able to encompass something that would really be worth us devoting our lives to. During these weeks of This Is Your Life, we're going to be looking, in order to kind of tear that about, we're going to be looking at some different characters that encounter Jesus and start, you know, getting the facade of how they see their lives already put together, cracked open by him. All of the stories come from the Gospel of John. John was one of the four people who, you know, wrote an account of the life of Jesus, and we call those the Gospels. And each one, there's, you know, something really interesting going on with them. Today, our story is about a man called Nicodemus. The story is found in the third chapter of John, and he has his why. He has his purpose just cracked open, stirred up by Jesus. Now, if you do our soap readings, you're on the, it's on the back of the Sunday paper. The blue up in the top corner is the readings for this week. You can find them online and so on as well. Just a word, soap is something that we try to do to admitting that the Bible is really hard to read and hard to figure out. It's a way of a manageable and a sustainable way of encountering the Bible and I think getting something out of it and helping us become more familiar, helping us find the heart of God within it. And so our readings are going to be coming from John during this, during these 5 weeks, and they're going to, you know, we'll be kind of moving around a little bit to follow these characters and some other stuff that fits along with them. Invite you to take that on. Now, this story about Nicodemus is actually pretty long. It's most of the chapter, the first 21 verses, and I'm just going to deal with a little bit of it here. And it's really highly charged with a lot of religious language that has been, I would say, co-opted by a lot of churches to mean things that they want it to mean, not necessarily stuff that was intended when it was all written, including the famous, you know, John 3:16. If you watch the Packer game this afternoon, you'll see someone, with a placard holding that one up for you. And I think we need to realize that this story about a man coming to Jesus, and he's doing it not because he's, you know, part of the script and one of those obligatory characters, but because he's a man who really is thinking about his why. And there's something about Jesus that makes him come to Jesus again. Let me just read you the first six chapters. It's on your outlines. It's also on the screen. So there was a Pharisee, right, one of the Jewish leaders, named Nicodemus, a leader of the Jews. I just said that. Okay. He came to Jesus by night. significant. He came to Jesus by night and said to him, "Rabbi, we know that you are a teacher who has come from God, for no one can do these signs that you do apart from the presence of God." And Jesus answered him, "Very truly I tell you, no one can see the kingdom of God without being born from above." Now, before I go on, you just kind of have to know, again, I talked about this last week a little bit, but we have this tendency to just like read Bible stories like Bible stories. You know, we're kind of used to them, we're immune to them, they're full of language that we don't use, and they're just kind of flat, and we go through them, and we're bored by them. But there's a backstory here, okay? We find it out, we're already introduced in the first chapter of John, that the Pharisees are really, they're not real fans of Jesus, and so they're sending people to Jesus to question him. Looking for evidence. They want to put this guy, you know, get him out of the way. And so Nicodemus comes by night. Now, that's partly because, you know, he's doing this on his own. He could get in trouble. There's peer pressure going on. There's certainly a lot of ingrained prejudice against Jesus and people like Jesus for this Pharisee. There's probably a lot of danger for him to come to Jesus on his own to actually ask a real question of Jesus. So he comes by night where he can't be spotted. But if you know John's gospel, John has a tendency, everything about John is metaphorical. So when he comes by night, it's not only the cover of darkness, but it means there's darkness in him. There's something, he's looking for light, but he's in dark. And he comes to Jesus and asks this question. He says, you know, we know you must be from God because how could you do stuff like this? And Jesus gives him this cryptic answer. Truly, I tell you, no one can see the kingdom of God without being born from above. Nicodemus says to him, how can anyone be born after having grown old? Can one enter a second time into the mother's womb and be born? Jesus answered, very truly, I tell you, no one can enter the kingdom of God without being born of water and spirit. What is born of the flesh is flesh, and what is born of the spirit is spirit. Now, the story goes on for another 15 verses. I encourage you to read it. It's part of your soap readings, like I say. It's all important stuff. Dig into it. But please, don't see it just as another Bible story spewing Bible talk, all right? It's the story of a man. A man who is overcoming prejudice, overcoming peer pressure, overcoming danger in order to see Jesus, because there is something about what he has seen and heard about this man that has made him question the answer to his why that he's carried around for a long, long time. That's given him an identity and a role, an occupation. It's given him his prestige and everything he was looking for in life. And suddenly there's something about this man that makes him say, I need to ask more questions. Maybe I don't have it right. Maybe I need to base it on something deeper, something bigger, something new. So, like you and me, our questions about this stuff, our certainty that maybe we come up with and the veneer of it gets cracked once in a while, his answers aren't resolved. In fact, I would say that after he has his first encounter in Jesus and leaves, he leaves more confused than when he came. But John gives us this insight into him. He tells about Nicodemus returning to Jesus two more times. The next time, he comes in the dark and he asks more questions. The third time he comes to Jesus, it's in the light. We don't hear what happens. We don't know how he's figured it out. We don't know what his commitment to Jesus is, but we don't know exactly where ours is going either, do we? I think in Nicodemus, we're starting to see ourselves. But honestly, with all of this that we see about the story of Nicodemus, I think the first thing that Jesus says tells us more about what's going to be happening in his life, and more about maybe what's happening in our life than anything else. And that is this line where Jesus responds to him and says, seriously, I'm telling you, you aren't ever going to be able to see God's kingdom. You aren't going to be able to perceive what God is doing in this world unless you are born from above. That is, let me even further translate that for you. You'll never be able to perceive what's really going on in this world, or in your life for that matter, if you are going to do it just from your human perspective and aren't willing to let God be your source of how to look at it. So I'm here today asking you not to try to figure out what the meaning of your life, the purpose of your life is all about on your own. I'm asking you to take a step of faith, to let go of control so that there's a chance for you to hitch your wagon onto something that is so much bigger, so much healthier, so much more significant than anything you could ever come up with. In fact, that might be a really, really simple prayer that you would hold on to for these 5 weeks as we talk about this is your life. And that prayer simply being these 6 words. Actually, it's 7, but who's counting? That prayer being, help me see what I cannot see. What if we just kept taking our lives seriously enough and realized how vital it is and how much potential, but how much forgiveness there is, and we kept turning to God day in, day out, and just said, help me see what I cannot see. Because I want my life to be there. I want my life to be there. So the first thing I want to point out is your life doesn't have a purpose, okay? A lot of people are going to tell you that. A lot of churches are going to tell you your life has a purpose and they want to define it for you. What I'm going to say is your life is purposeful, okay? Your life isn't expected to have a purpose, but to be purposeful. It isn't something that you either hit or miss. Your purpose isn't your job. It isn't your career. It isn't whether you're supposed to get married or partnered or not, or who it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to be, you know, whether you go to college and what college you go to or where you end up moving, any of that kind of stuff, all right? You maybe don't get to choose your purpose, but you certainly do get to choose what you do with it. God wants you to do that. Your purpose isn't something that you're supposed to do, but something you learn to embody. I mean, I hope that makes sense to you. I hope you realize that we've got a God that engages us as co-creators, God that loves us and takes us seriously and wants us to bring ourselves to the table and to figure out what to do with all this stuff. God just wants to help us understand better what this world is all about. I love these verses from Romans. Take your everyday, ordinary life, you're sleeping, you're eating, you're going to work, and you're walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. God isn't saying, I want to tell you how you're supposed to sleep and how you're supposed to eat and how you're supposed to walk around and what you're supposed to do. No, he says, take what you do and give it to me. In other words, see what my world is about. See what it means to be in sync with me. And then live your life. Try stuff. Make mistakes. Learn. But love and live deeply. When we do that, that's not a life with a purpose. It's a life full of purpose. Living out purpose. On the bottom of your outline, you're going to find a homework question that we invite you to engage with this week. It's pretty straightforward. It says, what is the difference between thinking of yourself as having a purpose for your life and thinking of yourself as having a purposeful life? And I invite you to spend some time thinking about that. And I'd really ask you to spend some time writing about it. Not a lot, 10, 15 minutes, your own reflections about that, and then share that with someone else. If you're in group life, I'd encourage you to do it before you go to group life, and I think you're going to find you kickstart some of the conversation there in a special way. So that's good. So likewise, not only do you not have just a purpose, but you have a life full of purpose. Likewise, it's incredibly important that you don't confuse your purpose with your accomplishments. All right? That's something we do all the time, and you're going to continue to make that mistake a lot of times, and that's okay, but kind of try to keep those things apart. Pursuing goals through hard work and persistence can make you successful. But success will not guarantee that you find meaning or that you find purpose or fulfillment or any of those sorts of things. All right? They are not the same thing. The converse of that is that it is very possible sometimes to find great meaning and great fulfillment, but not to really find much success in the way that the world typically establishes and says what it's all about. So, that's okay. So don't worry about it. Don't think that because you're not successful that you can't be, or you don't have a lot of accomplishments, that you can't be finding meaning and fulfillment. And if you're going to choose which one you're going to chase, I would go after the meaning and the fulfillment, wouldn't you? Maybe that's something we can help each other and reinforce each other as a community. That said, there's something really, really powerful when we start understanding who we are and what we are about. We start getting a sense of what our purpose in this world is, and then from there, we choose some goals. Those can be some pretty powerful goals to chase after. Those could be some really significant things to try to be successful at, but I think they typically look pretty different from things like, the things that the world usually throws up as our success goals about power and prestige and position and possessions and other things that start with the letter P other than purpose. I hate alliterations, but once in a while they're kind of fun, So all that said, All that said, what is your purpose? What does that mean to have a purpose? And what is our purpose? Oh, gee, look at the time. I really don't have it. Okay, you're going to have to figure that one out for yourself. I've got to go now. No, you know, I kind of make fun of that because there isn't really an answer to that. And you guys, you remember the movie City Slickers from a couple decades ago? Me either. But I do remember this. They answer it all for you.
Do you know what the secret of life is?
No, what?
This.
Your finger?
One thing. Just one thing.
That's great, but what's the one thing?
That's what you gotta figure out.
You know what the secret of life is? It's this. One thing. Just one thing.
And what's that?
I have no idea.
And the wise old cowboy that told him his one thing dies before he can ever tell him anything more, too. So, yeah, you know, Billy Crystal couldn't answer the question. So maybe it's one thing, you know, maybe it's one thing in the sense that everything should be unified, their lives should have integrity, and all that we're about is that way. Or maybe City Slickers isn't the pinnacle of philosophy in our world either. So maybe they're not barking up any of the right trees whatsoever. But I think, that aside, and the fact that we can answer that question, I can't tell you what the purpose of your life is about, and I'll never quite know what mine is. One of the things that I think we can do by looking at what is God really all about. I'm not talking about proving this with Bible verses. I'm talking about living with the Bible, living with God's word as we see it lived out in other people's lives, and we begin to kind of mature with it, with experience and conversation and so on. We start seeing the heart of God through that, and we start seeing that the heart of God continually focuses on some certain places. And I think those certain places are, maybe I would call, the characteristics of a life that is full of purpose. And I want to share those with you. I'd like you to try them on, see if they fit, see how they work. You know, realize that they aren't an answer. They don't tell you what to do, but maybe they tell you a purpose-filled life would be full of these kinds of things. And the first is this. A purposeful life weaves itself with God. Purposeful life weaves itself with God. You know, I've made this point already, but I just drill down on it one more time. Don't limit the scope of your life by not including God in what it's all about. Remember Jesus' first words to Nicodemus. Very truly, I tell you, no one can see the kingdom of God without being born from above. No one can really understand what life is about. No one can really see where God is at work. No one can see how they really fit into the universe unless they start letting the mind of God be part of the mind of themselves. And this is more than believing in God, if by that you mean acknowledging that God exists. It's more than knowing about God. It's more than even knowing a lot about God, because knowing about someone is very different than knowing someone. It means, but with Jacob Swell, we talk about rope, okay? Some of you feel I got a rope hanging up there that people are kind of doing some more weaving. But the first strand of rope is self. That's who you are. This is the question that we're dealing with. This is your life. And what we're saying is that, you know, if you want to figure that out, you need to be weaving it with God, the second strand. And that those two need to be woven together in order to grow, in order to, you know, have the experiences to move on in life. And when we're talking about weaving that way, we're talking about getting to know God like one would get to know someone that one is very close with and intimate with. It's engaging God. It's expecting God to show up and expecting God to matter in my life and in my here and now. It's expecting God to actually make sense. It means spending time with God, even when sometimes that isn't as convenient as we would like it to be. Yeah, that's hard. Reading the Bible isn't a chapter a day way to, keep the troubles away. Prayer and meditation aren't a quick answer method of resolving all the problems that you might have in your life, but they are both part of a relationship. They are both part of getting to know and of understanding, of spending time and developing intimacy. And it takes a relationship to have God make a difference in your life instead of just being a decoration on the shelf of your apartment or of your house, which is often where God ends up being. If you want a purpose-filled life, it's going to need more than you can bring to yourself. Include God into it. Weave God into your life. Now, the second is just like it, and you maybe North is going, okay? A purposeful life weaves itself with others. It weaves itself with others. Life was never meant to be lived alone. You weren't meant to and aren't going to be able to do it. Having other people in the vicinity around you doesn't count. All right? That's just being around people. God intends us in a purpose-filled life is engaged and is a part of it. It's weaving with other people. We're using this word weaving. And, you know, that's essential because it means you're interdependent. You're counting on each other. You're building something. You're uniting your lives. It's being interdependent. See, you aren't like one drop of water in a bucket, indistinguishable from all the other water other than by volume, how much you represent. But that's the way a lot of times we look at it. So I can abstract myself and I'll be just fine. I'm just maybe not as much, not as many, but I'm still just, that's me. That's not how it is. You're more like an organ or a part of a body that has a special role, a special function with the larger body, and the larger body is incredibly incomplete, maybe not even able to live without you, but likewise, you are not able to be complete. There's a million things you can't do. You maybe can't even truly survive without those other people because you are part of a larger body that is depending on itself and works with itself. Paul writes to explain this to those early followers of Jesus, and he says, "So in Christ, we who are many form one body." Seen that before. One body. And each member belongs to one another. Now, this is truly one of the unending themes in the Bible. The idea that you were created for community. That you need others and they need you. Purpose-filled lives seek to connect with other people. And I just got to throw this out there. Being an introvert or being an extrovert doesn't change this for you. You have the same needs for other people. It will change how you relate to other people and how you interact and how you structure that. That's fine. But it doesn't change the fact that you are created for community and all of us need to depend on and be depended on by others. That's the third strand of this rope, all right? Life is woven, starting with us. It includes God. And it includes other people. And we weave it together. And it hurts sometimes to do this. Love hurts. It's risky counting on someone who might let us down or someone who might turn on us. There are people that you don't understand and you will never figure out what is so good about them and how they could, why they have a value or purpose in this world. That's true. But we still belong to each other. A solo life is detached from part of its purpose, all right? A purposeful life weaves itself with others. A third characteristic of a purposeful life is this. A purposeful life grows. A purposeful life grows. It does not know the meaning of, I got that figured out, now I can cruise. You're going to find there aren't any stories like that anywhere in the Bible. You know, we have a tendency to see these people as, oh, they became great. They made it in the Bible. You know, they must really be good. You know, this is like the Hall of Fame of religion or something like that. You know, they've made it. No, they haven't. The reason that they're in there isn't because they're so good, but because we see what they went through, how they got torn around by God and by life and what they felt called to and how they're constantly trying to figure it out and what it means to them. And none of them were ever finished projects. God was never done with any of them. That's just the way it works. A purpose-filled life learns, it stretches, it discovers, it gets hurt, it gets back up, it perseveres. It perseveres in becoming. One verse, just among a million that one could pull out. We must grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ. Must grow up. And we've got to keep growing up. Yeah, on the right side of your outlines, you'll find a box. It says, purpose-filled people grow because they're engaged in purpose-filled relationships. Purpose-filled people grow because they are engaged with purpose-filled relationships, in purpose-filled relationships. There's some important language there. Jacob's well happened 8 years ago it began, or at least one way of saying why it got started is because it wanted to give people an opportunity to live with purpose. They wanted to give people an opportunity to have lives that were purposeful. Now, because of that, you might notice that we don't try to keep you busy doing lots of things. In fact, if you look at our Jacobswell calendar, it's kind of embarrassing. There's not really very much on there, you know? But the point is that your lives are important, and you're the one who's supposed to figure out how to take what we figure out here and how to live it out in the world. And we don't want to keep you busy with stuff of the organization so that you don't have time to do the real thing, which is where you're called and what you're doing. There are a few things, though, that we feel are really, really important for us to provide for people in order for you to have truly purpose-filled lives. And one of those are purpose-filled relationships. And we call it group life. Now, we know, as well as anybody, group life is not the only way to have purpose-filled relationships. But what we also know is that most people don't really have them. We've all got friends. Some have good friends. Sometimes those friendships are really purpose-filled and reliable and sustained and probing and growing. Most of the time, they're kind of friends. And that's good. I'm not against those friendships. Same thing in our families. Our families, I think we're hopefully, you know, great units where we strengthen each other and help each other grow. But sometimes maybe we're almost a little too close to be able to engage in the way that those purpose-filled relationships need to, or sometimes we just kind of need to grow beyond our families, and we need to find a different community of people that we can engage in some of these conversations with. And, you know, I think that's kind of natural. I think that's pretty important for us to do. So we try to make this available for people. So purpose-filled relationships, just take a second. What is a purpose-filled relationship? And you're going to see a lot of relationship between what a purpose-filled life and a purpose-filled relationship is all about. And that is you're going to find, if you are in purpose-filled relationships, that this is true. When something big happens in your life, good or bad, you want to share it with these people. You just will. This isn't like a rule or something you're supposed to do. You're just going to want to do it. That lets you know that you've got a purpose-filled relationship going on there. Good stuff, not so good stuff, you want to share it with these people. The next is that in purpose-filled relationships, trust and openness are always building. And maybe it's way up here, maybe it's not, maybe it's down here, but it's building. Because that's how you see each other, and that's what your expectations are, and that's where your grounding is. Also, in purpose-filled relationships, we expect the relationship to spur us to grow. We expect those relationships not to leave us, not to justify who we are, not to let us off the hook, to support us, to encourage us, to make us grow. Make us grow. The last one is, these people know what the best care is for each other in this relationship group, and they are ready and they're willing to give it. That is so key. If you're saying, I don't have people like that in my life, it's time to start looking for it. It's time to expect it. It's time to let the other people know that these are the kind of relationships I want to have. I want to be with people that I just automatically want to share the stuff about my life with you. I want us to grow in how we trust and are open, how we're vulnerable, we risk things among each other. I want us to use these relationships to actually help us grow, not just keep the status quo going. And I want us to be able to care for each other in ways that's truly appropriate and truly helpful for where we are, because most people don't really know what I need. But if we would build this relationship, you would know. And I would know for you too. Okay? This is big stuff. And when we have these kinds of relationships, growth happens for us. All right? Our own lives start filling out that kind of aspect of growth and of being full of purpose. So the fourth characteristic that I want to dive into is this. A purpose-filled relationship serves. It serves. It realizes it is not a bucket filling up with stuff, it is a pipe. It is a conduit, channeling stuff on to the rest of the world. Jesus, this is, again, one of Jesus' themes, he hammered over and over and over again, and he said it in ways that were often very puzzling, showing that this is kind of an counterintuitive thing. You know, but the one I chose here is that the greatest among you will be your servant. Well, hold it, Jesus, that's not the way it goes. The greatest among me is going to be the big guy, the big shot. No, it's going to be your servant, Jesus says. There's something counterintuitive about this. To be fulfilled, you might think that you ought to get and you ought to keep stuff. In fact, that is what most people are doing most of the time, and I find myself doing it an awful lot of the time. But the truth is that getting and keeping stuff isn't fulfilling, it's just filling. It's called swelling, really. God designed us to be conveyors of the many gifts entrusted to us, including our time, our energy, our expertise, our experience, our wealth, all those things, everything. And we are the healthiest when this stuff flows through our life. Yes, we enjoy it, we benefit from it, but it moves on to the world around us. It doesn't back up, it doesn't pool up in us. Children are a great example of this. I got three of mine here today, okay? And I can just imagine, if Chris and I had not had any kids, you know how much more money I would have right now? You know how much more stuff and how many more trips we would have gone on if we didn't have those bloodsuckers in our lives? And our house would be nicely, you know, kind of tooled towards us and our needs and well-appointed, you know, kind of like someone in, you know, in their late 30s would want it to be. And, you know, it's tempting, but I mean, seriously, can I seriously say that? No, because they're going to be picking my nursing home someday. No, no, I mean, truly, truly. I mean, it is so absurd to even think that. I mean, the investment we have in the people we love is like, I wouldn't trade that for anything. All the stuff, the money, I mean, I could care less. I don't even think about that. I don't even measure that. You know, and it's not just about having kids. There are people who don't have kids, and their calling isn't to have kids. So I don't want to make that be the... But I think of another experience I had. So I was on a trip in Wisconsin with a bunch of other people, and we were coming back to the Twin Cities. It was summertime across the Stillwater Bridge. You've been there, all right? You know, traffic backed up. It's really slow. It's 100 degrees. We finally get across the bridge, and there's a car pulled off the side, just on the other side of the bridge, on the Minnesota side, and with a flat tire. And there's this old man changing the tire, trying to change the tire. And, you know, I got to it, and I said, like, oh, shit. Is that this was actually before Jacob's Well, but it's in Jacob's Well, we have many of you have know the phrase, damn you, Jacob's Well. As you get in these situations and you really don't want to stop, you don't want to do this, but you just, there's something in you that says, I just got to do it. You know, it's not a damn you, Jacob's Well experiences. So I pull over and I go to this man and he really does not look good. I mean, he's just like pale. And his wife immediately jumps out of the car. Says, oh, please, thank you for stopping. He says, I'm afraid my husband will get a heart attack or something. So I get him back in the car. They start the car, get their air conditioning, go. We're already late for whatever we were supposed to be coming back for. This is going to put us back further. But I change his tire. We get him sent off on their way, and they're fine. And we're 30 minutes later than we were already late because we stopped to do this. And you know what? Quite a few years after that, none of us that were in the car that day remember where we were coming from. We don't remember what we were coming back for. We don't remember what happened because we were late. All of us remember that we stopped and we helped that man. And we all look at that as saying, that was a good... I mean, 10, 15 years later, why do I remember it? Why do I remember it? Other than somehow it was in sync with what I'm really all about. Part of my purpose was to do something, to care for other people, to not just... You know, focus my time and my attention, my energy on myself as it's convenient for me, but to give that to other people in their lives. Yeah. So, yeah, purpose-filled people serve other people. They aren't buckets, they're pipes. The fifth is this. A purposeful life shares its story. A purposeful life shares its story. Folks, you are becoming experts on things that no one else knows anything about, and that subject is you. And you are one of God's great experiments to try to figure things out for other people. Your story does not immediately just translate to someone else, but people are going to know how to translate it. They're going to hear what is going on with you, and they're going to say, that is really important for me. It broadens my perspective. It lets me see things. You aren't created to tell your story in order to tell other people what they're supposed to do. But don't hesitate. Do not hesitate to share with other people what you are learning, what compels you, what puzzles you, what stymies you. Again, a common theme in this Bible that we discover the heart of God in. In 1 Peter 3, always be ready to give an explanation to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you. yet do it with gentleness and respect. I like that. They need to hear it, your story. You need to share it. You will never understand your story and what is going on in your life and what these purposes have to do with you until you start telling that story to other people. And you need their feedback as well. Because just because you had a neat experience and you liked it and you told it doesn't mean that you understand what it's all about right now. It's not over. You're also going to have to remember that that puts you on the other side of the conversation. Just like you need to be sharing your story with other people, you need to be a person that others can share their story with. You need to do the listening as well. And the fact is, there's 7 billion of them and one of you. You probably need to do more listening than talking. You're all looking at me and saying, remember that, Greg. You know, and don't believe you don't have a story. If you think, well, I don't know what to tell people about me. I'm just another person. You know, you've got too much Hollywood around you making you think that your story is supposed to be like that. That's not what it's about. It's your mistakes. It's your questions. It's your doubts. It is your insights. It's your experiences. People need to learn from all of that. I mean, some things about the stuff that you cannot figure out or that have totally just knocked you off or you just totally do not understand might be incredibly encouraging to someone else who feels the same thing right now. And they need to run into someone who doesn't have it all together. They need to know that, you know, God can still be with me. My life can still matter, even though it does not make sense. In fact, it hurts a lot right now. Those are important stuff for us. Purpose-filled lives share their stories, and they are there for others to share the stories with them. So this Nicodemus character, he thought he had it figured out. That was until he started hearing about and seeing this man, Jesus. And something about Jesus, something about what he represented and what was coming through his presence cracked the veneer of his certainty about the fact that he had it figured out already. It didn't happen all at once, but Nicodemus was ready to change. And when he came to Jesus that night, he was saying, "The reason I'm thinking this over is you. The reason is you." In a minute, we're going to be taking our offering, and when the band starts playing, I invite you to pass these offering baskets, and you can put your offerings in there. If you're new, just thank you for your presence. That's your gift. You can also put your communication card in there at that time. But hold off for a little bit. What I invite you to do as we close here is to be thinking about, where is God taking you? We're going to be, maybe thinking about what your prayer is. Like, what is it that maybe you have been struggling with? The answers that you have already found for what you thought your purpose was, and maybe you're ready to rethink bits and pieces of it, or maybe all of it. Or maybe it's just the way you understand this simple prayer of, "God, help me see what I cannot see." I invite you to write anything down about that on your communication card and stick that in the offering basket as well. And, you know, we'll hold that with you in prayer and be part of that team. Be one of those others that are woven with you as you try to move forward in your life. That's important stuff. The band is going to play a song right now that picks up what Nicodemus was experiencing. It's a song that Douglas Robbs wrote a bit ago. It's called "The Reason Is You." You're going to recognize the song. Robbs wrote it. I don't think he was talking about God. I think he was talking about a girlfriend that he'd burnt bridges with. And by the time he realized that she actually did give him reason to be the person he wanted to be, it was too late. But I don't think it's too hard for us to flip that. And to say, "God, I can put a pretty good life together. You know, I kind of know what things, and sometimes I have good days and sometimes I have some bad days, but when I really stop, when I really think, I know that I don't really have it yet. And I really would like you to help me just figure out what the question is. And to help me find a path, and when I get off of it, help me find my way back. And the reason I'm doing any of this is you. There's something bigger than me out there. There's something that loves me. There's something that has insight into me that I could never have for myself. The reason, God, is you."